I'll probably be here.
Mr. Kelly is clear.
Yeah, okay.
We're ready.
Okay. The Senate Capital Investment Committee will come to order. Today is April 10th, Friday, April 10th, and we have one bill on the schedule today, and it is Senate File 699. And there's quite a bit of detail as we were looking at the information and everything. But I'd like to have Senator Pratt welcome. If you could kind of give an introduction, and then Director Kelly, if you can kind of walk us through how we got to this point from the previous disaster. So, Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee, and I'd like to just play a quick snippet of a video here to take us back about 10 months.
I wonder how Ann Murray's doing at that retirement.
That's going to replay the end. Sorry.
Okay.
Society. The worst damage is along Highway 169 from Jordan to Henderson. The governor called out the National Guard to help. Henderson is one of two communities where the Guard is providing support now. Guard members will monitor the levees as the water continues to rise. WCCO's Jennifer Merrily is live in Henderson tonight. Jennifer?
You know, emergency management crews expect the water to crest here on Monday. That means it could still rise over the weekend. You can see the sandbags against the floodgates there, and it's all connected to the levees that we're standing on in an effort to keep the water from getting into the town. And while the water is a big issue, another problem is the mud. It's caused a lot of damage here in Henderson and in nearby Jordan. Take a look.
Came up the stairs, I was just like, oh, my God.
Barbara Lee rents out this apartment in the historic downtown Jordan Brewery building. Fortunately, her tenant was gone when the heavy rain caused the mud to slide.
And we can't really tell, like, how far uphill this landslide came from, but it was obviously a large chunk of dirt that came flying down the hill. That stove was against that wall, and the whole side of the building just came through the wall.
All five apartments were evacuated, and for now, the brewery set to reopen after 80 years is on hold. The concern, another mudslide.
I say, we can fix the building. We can take this down the stairs, but how do you make sure that these trees don't fall down again?
The mud is also a concern in Henderson.
The hill up above started caving in, coming down through the drain field.
Crews worked to unclog the area, and we're told this home and two others were damaged by a mudslide. The next concern is the water that continues to rise, and if the levees and floodgates can hold the water and prevent it from flooding Henderson.
Everything down in this lower part of town is basically in the floodplain. So if those levees would go, it would pretty well cover all this downtown.
National Guardsmen will patrol the levees and watch for soft spots for roughly the next 2 weeks.
It's an important role for us. It's something that we're trained to do and we're capable of doing, and we're here to help in any way that we can.
And National Guardsmen are out here tonight. They'll be out here walking the levee overnight.
I think that gives you a good view of what we're talking about. That was 10 months ago. We had last June we had torrential storms come through large sections of the state, particularly in the southern and western regions. There were two epicenters, one located around Scott Sibley in Lasur County, the other down around Rock and Nobles County. Flash floods caused washouts to roads, mudslides damaged buildings that you just saw, floodwaters damaged homes and caused sewers to back up in basements. And farm fields looked like lakes. After the initial storms, damage continued to occur as the water followed its natural flow, fueled by additional rains. I remember on June 23rd, Governor Dayton came down to the groundbreaking ceremony at the Highway 101 river crossing, and one of my county commissioners put a rock at the edge of the river where the flood had started. And less than an hour later, after the ceremony was finished, we went back and looked. The river had risen about 2 feet. That same afternoon, Governor Dayton went down and met with residents of Blakely and heard devastating stories about how mudslides and crumbling roads caused the evacuation of that township. Many areas of Prior Lake had sandbag. They ran pumps and set up 24-hour neighborhood watches to keep their homes safe. Local businesses suffered 30% losses in revenue because of lost tourist traffic. The Alpa in Prior Lake, which moves floodwaters from the lake down to the Minnesota River, was running at 60 cubic feet per second. That's about 450 gallons of water per second moving out of the lake, and yet it was moving into the lake at 3 times that rate. In Sibley, Scott, and Le Sueur counties, roads and bridges were closed, and that caused emergency vehicles to have to take long detours and have extremely long response times. Upstream in St. Paul, Mayor Coleman claimed it or declared a disaster, our emergency declaration, as they built levees here in St. Paul and Harriet Island was submerged. The floods in 2014 were devastating. Because of forethought, last session we set aside money so that we could continue recovery efforts without having to call a special session. Unfortunately, the Minnesota Recovers Task Force, though, didn't have the urgency to come together and find those or really identify those needs that weren't covered by FEMA. In January, we unanimously passed Senate File 1, a bill that covered the state's FEMA obligation. And at that time, I updated this body that there would be a supplemental bill coming through to cover the non-FEMA damage. Senate File 699 is that supplemental bill. It's a comprehensive relief package where we worked with all 37 counties in the disaster area, partnered with emergency management, and vetted all of our projects through the Minnesota Recovers Task Force. It's consistent with the state responses to other disasters, namely the Duluth floods of 2012 and the windstorms of 2013. Our communities need these funds quickly. And we need them in order to continue the recovery work that we've already started. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Director Kelly.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Kelly, if you could give your name and please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joe Kelly. I am Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety.
Thank you.
And Senators, to continue on the introduction that Senator Pratt just gave, where he describes that it started raining back in June, on June 11th, and did not stop for a month and did extensive damage to large portions of Minnesota. As we went through that period of time, the governor declared an emergency. At some point in time, we realized that we had a disaster on our hands, so we requested that the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, come to Minnesota and help us do a damage assessment to determine if Minnesota was going to be eligible for federal disaster assistance through FEMA. They came and we began that process in early July. The governor made a request to President Obama asking for a federal disaster declaration, which is the enabling trigger, if you will, to get FEMA assistance. That request was granted, but it was a bit incremental. There are a number of things that are different with this disaster than the typical. The first declaration was based on 8 counties. We continued to work with FEMA to assess other counties because, as senators will recall, this disaster was across the state from Coochaching County in the north to Rock County in the southwest, and of course into south central and southeastern Minnesota. and it took a considerable amount of time and effort to figure out exactly where the damages were and how to quantify them. To make a long story short, in the end, we received, I think it was two more amendments to the declaration that the governor requested, and the final cataloging was $53 million worth of damage assessed in 37 counties and three tribal governments across Minnesota. We also had the first two state disasters, state only, you know, where the, it's not a presidential declaration, it's a gubernatorial declaration. We had the first two of those in our history in accordance with Minnesota statutes, Chapter 12B, which was passed during the last legislative session. And those were counties that were in and around this same event, but either because of timing or the amount of damage were not included in the FEMA declaration. So once we got to that point, we began working with FEMA as well as with local officials, who then began the process of applying for public assistance, which is the technical term for the disaster relief that FEMA provides to help repair public infrastructure. At the same time, the Minnesota Recovers Task Force held initial meetings and as well as our own outreach to the local communities to find out if there are other damages, if there are damages that are not FEMA eligible that the community might need help with. When we go out to begin the process of having local units of government apply for FEMA assistance, we also give them instructions that if in this process you find out that some of your damage is not covered by FEMA, this is what you do. And essentially, simplistically, you forward that through your county emergency manager to the Minnesota Recovers Task Force, and we'll bundle all that up. We were able to, because of the disaster contingency account that was established in the last legislative session, we were able to immediately start providing reimbursement and financial relief to the counties who were included in the federal declaration and had FEMA public infrastructure damages. We ran out of that money right about the end of the calendar year, right about Christmas time, New Year's time frame, which is why Senate File 1 was introduced and passed so quickly, because we were simply out of the state share of the money that was needed to help our local communities recover. And that bill was, in a sense, a deficiency bill for fiscal year 15, because the bills that we have been paying since that passed, since Senate File 1 passed and the money was appropriated, we have been using that money in this fiscal year to continue to pay for the recovery. I do recall very clearly Senator Pratt that day saying, this is one piece of the puzzle. There is another act to follow, if you will. And there always has been. At least in recent times, Minnesota is a pretty, unfortunately, disaster emergency-prone state. Following the devastating floods in southeast Minnesota in 2007, the legislature passed Chapter 12A, and the purpose of Chapter 12A is to provide the structure and the authorizations for the legislature to appropriate money for disaster relief that is not covered by FEMA. So Senate File 1 essentially was the federal the state match for the federal programs, including FEMA, the Federal Highway Administration that works to repair roads and bridges, and also the Board of Water and Soil Resources. So that kind of took care of, if you will, the first part, which is the cost share for the FEMA-eligible disaster, our contribution, to that effort. Meaning, though, that there are still unmet needs, there are costs and burdens being borne by the local communities that are not eligible for FEMA. And that is the purpose of the legislation in Chapter 12A, to give the state the opportunity to provide resources as well as provide some structure to that. And that's what happened in 2007, and when the bill was passed, 12A was passed in 2008. Before it was It was sort of, I have a problem, I have an idea, I would like to appropriate money for it. Chapter 12A gives us a structure and assigns eligibility criteria and responsibilities to state agencies. So Senate File 1 took care of the cost share for the FEMA eligible. Senate File 699 is the proposal to help communities with those things that are not eligible. We have done this in the past. This is a kind of a well-traveled path in recent times. I think going back to 2009, almost every disaster that has followed has had either two bills, but really normally two articles within a bill, particularly if it was a special legislative session. Bill 1 or Article 1 dealt with the FEMA match, and Article or Bill number 2 dealt with the ineligible or the 12A requirements. So whether it was the what we sometimes refer to as the Duluth flood of 2012, the ice storms in southwest Minnesota in 2013, and several others, as Senator Pratt pointed out, this is kind of a normal course of business because Minnesota has said we want to do more for our local communities than FEMA is willing to pay for. So, Senator, I hope that kind of provides a broad context of why we're here today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kelly. I think it does. I think there was it was hard, well, for myself, but also for others, I think, to understand exactly why the disaster bill didn't cover all of the costs right up front. And I can understand, as Senator Pratt pointed out, there are multiple disasters that were occurring, and as you pointed out, these were amended over time. And I think one other thing that I am not sure was mentioned is that the assessment process wasn't complete when some of these requests went in. And I know it's difficult to assess what the cost of repair or something like that is, because it's sometimes a very massive job. So,
if I could comment on that, sure. Senator and members, this was probably, and I got my staff to my left here, this damage assessment that we conducted with FEMA was probably the longest, the most strung out, and the most fragmented of any that we have probably ever done. It was challenging for a whole bunch of reasons. From, like I said, it was kind of a rolling storm that covered the entire width and breadth of the state. We had difficulty working with FEMA because of some changes to their policies. Eventually, we got to the point where we had the counties, with a couple of exceptions, designated for assistance that we needed. But even then, the value of the damage was significantly understated. I think by the time FEMA closed their books on the damage assessment phase, they said this is about a $35 million disaster in Minnesota. And we had argued strenuously that, man, you are understating the impact that this has had on Minnesota's communities. As we have now worked through what we call the project formulation, which is where it's not an estimate anymore, we actually go out and FEMA works with the locals and they say, here's the road that needs to be repaired, here's how much it's going to cost. When we actually have had the time now to do those estimates, it's gone from $35 million disaster to a $53 million disaster. So it's been challenging in a lot of ways to get to this point. I think it was also a little confusing, Mr. Chair and members, because this was the first time that we've used the disaster contingency account, which is a great tool for us to be able to help communities recover quickly. But we always anticipated, as Senator Pratt announced back in January, that there would be another bill. I think some people misunderstood that Senate File 1 was it, that that was the disaster bill for this particular emergency. And when truly we were just in the process of continuing to work through that other. So whether it was local officials or state agencies that figured that the door had been closed or the chapter had been written, that may have caused some of the confusion that has made this process string out a little longer. I personally will take and my staff, we will be much more aggressive, much more assertive next time with making sure that people understand that there are two parts to every disaster in Minnesota. The part that FEMA takes care of, and that includes the match that the state has to, what they call the non-federal share, as well as the supplemental disaster assistance so that we can help our communities recover and get things back to normal.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a question. I was looking at the A1 amendment, which I'm assuming we're going to be working from, and the local road and bridge reconstruction, A7, sorry, the local road and bridge reconstruction is less than $1 million, but the greatest share of the dollars being asked for is the erosion for the Board of Water and Soil Resources because of erosion, sediment, and water quality. And I'm just looking through the materials from the Rock County SWCDs where they're saying that the first time in 19 years they're asking for some RIM monies. My question to you is, how much federal money would this broker with this with these dollars going toward that type of easement or correction?
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scalise, I will ask the Board of Water and Soil Resources to come up and answer that question. But to put it in the context, because you ask a very good question, nearly all of the damages to roads and bridges and culverts and our road network system was covered by the FEMA Public Assistance Program. There are a few. The $800,000, I believe, is the suggested amount. That really mostly relates to mitigation type of work. How do we, now that FEMA is going to pay to repair the road, are there some things we can do smarter so that it won't happen again? FEMA generally under the public assistance program is only interested in repairing the facility, in this case a road, to its pre-disaster condition. If you want to do something extra to mitigate it from future damage, that normally falls on someone else. The Board of Water and Soil Resources, and I'll let Mr. Keene speak to that, a lot of their type of work is mitigation type of work to prevent this from happening, but in his case, on the natural features side. So,
I think before Mr. Keene addresses the committee, I want to say that the quorum is present. And then Senator Ingebrigtsen moves the A7 amendment so that we have that before us. Okay. All in favor of the A7, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Amendment is adopted. All right. Mr. Keene.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Al Kane. I serve as Chief Engineer for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And to address the question that Senator Scalzi had asked about reinvested Minnesota Reserve, whenever we receive funds for disaster response for RIM, we will try to partner with federal programs to the extent that we can. At this time, there aren't any, I believe, that we will be able to partner with. In the past, we have been able to do some flood mitigation state money combined with the federal wetland reserve program, but that doesn't have funding at this time. So therefore, I believe that we would be acting like we do with other straight RIM money for conservation easements on lands that were damaged by the floods and that landowners would like to take out of production, if you will, and put into a conserving use. So I believe that in all likelihood, We would be using the RIM dollars alone. If there comes some other federal program that we could partner with, we would certainly investigate that and partner to the extent that we could.
Senator Scalzi?
Thank you. No, that was the question.
Okay. Right. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a couple of questions with Mr. Kelly with regards to and then to Senator Pratt. So just take us really quickly through the original event here. There was X amount of dollars that were spent already from this fund. That figure was how much? Was it $35 million or was it 50-some million? I forget your testimony.
Mr. Kelly?
For the first part of the state that has already paid.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we began the year, if you will, with $3 million in the disaster contingency account. Our share of the $53 million, if you will, is then somewhere around $13 million. Senate File 1 appropriated $9.635 million to the disaster contingency account to pay for the state share, if you will, the local share of the damages from this event. That, again, covers the FEMA eligible expenses. So it's been a total probably that will be spent on this of about $13 million for public infrastructure damage. And I don't know if that answers your question, Senator.
Well, I guess,
Mr. Chair, if I could. Ingebrigtsen.
The bottom line is this is finishing up this one event. I mean, this is what you're here requesting, is finishing up the one event that you had. I mean, there's tails is not the proper word, but finishing up the, as you said, you can't just all of a sudden go out in one week and come up with all the damages. They've been turning up all along here, and now you're back here to finish basically this thing up. And,
Senator Ingebrigtsen, just to that point.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You also have to remember that it was prolonged. We couldn't see some of the damage.
Right.
You know, take Prior Lake, for example. We were underwater for almost 2 months. And it wasn't until those floodwaters receded that the agencies and FEMA could really get in and assess some of that damage.
That's right. And Mr. Chair, one more question with regards to the sheet you've handed out here. You've got hash marks next to the some of the counties, one of them being Lake of the Woods, Steele, Sibley, Scott. And at the bottom it says slope failure list, 10 counties, potentially eligible for some of the 500,000. That isn't going to come anywhere close to it. Is that per event or per county? It's not clear to me how that is figured.
Mr. Kelly?
Or Mr. Chair, it's
Mr. King.
Mr. Kane, answer that question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, the funding that we have there is to provide non-federal match for the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. So the idea being that for those counties that had locations of stream bank and slope failures where they would be eligible for HMGP program, that Bowser could provide then non-federal share for those, and those are the counties that were on the list that we have that identifies those kinds of slope failures where there may be eligible projects that the Bowser program can help provide the non-federal share.
Can I interject on the spreadsheet that I believe comes from your department? The DR 4182, all of these counties are under that disaster declaration?
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct. All the counties listed there, and that is one of the qualifying criteria under Minnesota Statutes Chapter 12, is you have to have been in an area designated by a federal disaster.
Okay. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kelly, I just want to make sure that as you've discussed eligibility, that as you understand, because I think maybe members have a little bit of confusion relative to the statute, that the ability to provide assistance for non-FEMA-related disaster items is permissive language, correct?
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, correct. And for the FEMA, non-eligible, and I know it's a mouthful, for the stuff that FEMA won't pay for, the money, according to Chapter 12A, has to be specifically appropriated by the legislature. So if I understand your question, yes, it's permissive. It provides the authority to appropriate money for the non-eligible expenses that the local communities have incurred.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kelly, obviously you know that. I just want to make sure members on the committee understand, because I think Mr. Kelly's testimony a couple of minutes ago as I came in suggested you could have drawn the inference that the non-FEMA related items were mandatory, as is the FEMA match, but it's permissive language in the statute.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Any other? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cohen, I appreciate your comments. We met with Speaker Doughton and Majority Leader Bach back in January to bring them up to speed on this, and it's something that's been custom and practice of the legislature to do this since, you know, prior to 2007. And I can't speak prior to my predecessor, but for the last at least 20 years, Scott County has been very supportive in helping other disaster areas and counties recover. And this is our first time at the table, and so we're hoping that we'll have the support of this body to help us recover.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen,
Senator Pratt, don't misunderstand me. I'm not suggesting that the legislature has not done this, but the legislative appropriation relative to the disaster fund, the language that was provided for that fund, takes into account and attempts to codify the ability to make such payments, because, as you suggest, it was something done on an informal basis and, prior to passage of the legislation. And this was something where there was a lot of discussion in the promulgation of legislation since I was the author of it. And when Representative Pulaski and I had numerous meetings with, among other folks, and Mr. Kelly was a participant, Mr. Kelly's predecessor obviously spent lots of time on this, we had a lot of discussion about what's eligible, what's not eligible, how to deal with trying to bring into statute what, as you suggest, has been somewhat customary in the past, but not uniformly so. So that doesn't suggest that what you're presenting to this committee is not appropriate. To the contrary. But I just want to make sure it was more a comment directed toward what I'll suggest was Mr. Kelly's strong advocacy, at least that was my inference, for the non-FEMA-related expenses, but not in any way to suggest that what's in front of us is not appropriate.
Well, and I've got to, Senator Pratt, thank the task force and the agencies. Once we opened up the question, we had a lot of requests come through, a lot more than what you're seeing here, and we worked very hard to vet those out and make sure that all of the projects that you see on this spreadsheet do in fact meet the 12A criteria that Mr. Kelly outlined.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Pratt,
Senator Cohen.
I understand, agree, and recognize from what I've heard as to the degree of scrutiny that Scott County and the related and the agencies within Scott County, as well as working with the appropriate state agencies, have done. Mr. Chairman and members, not just directed toward Scott County, but there was a lot of discussion in the promulgation of the statute relative to all sorts of requests that come in, and requests that, to be honest, are somewhat afield of what a state, even if it might do it or possibly could do it, it was just a little bit beyond what we felt were the capabilities of the state. But I know that in Scott, having talked to both yourself and obviously Senator Roebling about what Scott County has done, my comments were directed more to the general, not to the particular.
And I apologize, Senator Cohen. I just meant to praise the work of Emergency Management, Minnesota Task Force, and the agencies.
Senator Thomas Oney.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, maybe I'm just not real clear on how the money is being distributed here. I see in the bill that Prior Lake Watershed District is in the bill for a specified amount of money, and then the rest of this spreadsheet, is the rest of the spreadsheet what everybody's going to get, or is it the perceived amount that they need, and then they'll all have to apply for what's left in the bill? Who can tell me how the money's going to be distributed?
Senator Thomas Oney, do we have Mr. Kelly, do you want to go through that spreadsheet or your staff?
Well, I don't really need you to go through the spreadsheet, but is what's on the spreadsheet what's going to be awarded to everybody, or is that just what they claim they needed, and then they'll have to actually prove they need it, or there's going to be another application process for the money that's in this bill, or how is the money going to be distributed? Because I only see one actual dedicated amount here in the bill, and so the rest of it seems to be pretty general.
Senator Thomas, maybe what we should do is have Senator Pratt and others walk through the amendment that was adopted, and then they can explain, I think, what goes for each section of the bill.
Yeah, I can understand that part. It looks to me like only one place has been specified as receiving a certain amount of money, and all the rest of it is pretty general. I don't know if I'm right about that. I don't see anybody other than Prior Lake being singled out here, and I'm fine with that. I'm just wondering how the rest of the money is getting distributed and whether or not this is the actual amount that everybody's going to get. I don't think that's too hard an answer.
Okay. Senator, or Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, I'll speak generally to that issue, and then we do have representatives again from the Department of Natural Resources and Board of Water and Soil Resources that can answer the question. But generally, I would say there is a jurisdiction and a project and a dollar value associated with the totals under each of those sections. I can't speak as to why particularly Prior Lake is the one designated, but behind each of those numbers is a specific list of projects in local jurisdictions. So it's not a general appropriation to an agency that says, figure out where to spend this money. They know exactly the projects that have been identified and have been vetted to go with that.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Pratt, I'm a little skeptical about mentioning this, but under that flood hazard mitigation, actually all seven of my counties are listed on the sheet. Only six of the seven do receive some relief. But Waterville, which made national news, was severely damaged because of their outlet channel. And I was going to ask later on before Senator Tomasoni's question, if some of the dollars, Mr. Kelly, from the DNR acquisitions, removals, and facility natural resources damage column is going to be taking care of those mitigation issues, where obviously it was the channel in Waterville between the two lakes that caused much of the damage in that community, to the point where they've had to take out whole subsections of homes. So there's two questions in that in my statements. Is I would like to have an answer why Prior Lake is just singled out here, and if there is other room for areas that other communities that had severe damage from these mitigation issues, flood mitigation issues, that hopefully the DNR will take care of. That should have been taken care of years ago.
Senator Rosen and committee members, I think this might be a good point where we would have the agencies come up and go through this.
And Mr. Chairman, just to point out,
Senator Thomas,
it looks like from the previous special session in 2012 when we did this, we didn't prioritize any particular place, and it was just a general appropriation. And I'm not sure how they gave the money out that time either, but so apparently somebody figured out where all the money goes. But to Senator Rosen's point, there's nobody that is actually specified in the legislation that says the money goes to so-and-so for so much money. So we're on the same point.
So if we can have the agencies go through the probably the amendment that was adopted, and which would then correspond to the spreadsheet that we have. And members, there's actually two spreadsheets. The one that has the long list of communities, and the other spreadsheet is from our Senate fiscal analyst, Senate File 699. And as maybe, I'm not sure who's going to start off, Mr. Keene? Okay. Members, the intent of the chair is that we have adopted the amendment, but that would, when we're done dealing with this committee meeting, is to lay this on the table so that we can be sure that all things are in order before we get, to the passing it on. So I want to be sure that, give members an opportunity to look things over before we actually take action on it, final action on it. So, Mr. Keene.
Mr. Chairman, members, I will give you a summary of how we have arrived at the numbers that are in the first column. And that first column on the spreadsheet that has all of the counties listed is based upon our work with local soil and water conservation districts primarily. Immediately after there is a governor's declaration of an emergency, we will go out to the soil and water conservation districts and ask them to begin collecting a definition of needs. Mostly what they're looking at is private lands, because that's who they help with local conservation work. And recall that in Senate File 1, the funding that was provided to Bowser was for repair of existing conservation practices. So that's one of the columns that we ask SWCDs to define, damage to existing conservation practices. And then we also ask them to define need for new conservation practices because of the disaster. So what you see in the first column on that spreadsheet is a summary of needs defined for new conservation practices within those counties working through our soil and water conservation districts. The other thing to be aware of is that we don't give you or give to HSEM, and in this case for this bill and to the governor's office, the entire number, because we estimate based upon past experience that some of those existing repair, but actually primarily the new conservation practices, may be eligible for federal programs such as the Environmental Quality Incentive Program. So we know based on history that some will be eligible for that. We will try to make sure that those get directed to that federal program first, and therefore the total need that our SWCDs define is not the total need that we have for state money. So we usually use, based upon, again, recent years' experience, 60%. So we estimate that 60% of the total needs that the SWCDs define is what would be necessary for state funding, either to partner with federal programs or to be able to do those conservation practices with state money alone if there is no federal money that's eligible for those programs.
Mr. King, is the number in that first column 60% or 100%?
It is 60% of the numbers that we got from the soil and water conservation districts.
Okay, thank you.
And recognize, too, that throughout the entire recovery period, there are some projects that might fall off the list because either they've been accomplished another way, or that maybe it's decided that, well, we thought that that one was a place where we need a new conservation practice. The landowner has taken care of it and decided not to install a separate conservation practice. And then we may have others that come onto the list because, for example, in agricultural land, oftentimes you can't see the damage that occurs during the growing season until after the growing season the crops are off. So therefore, we have some that maybe come into the list later because they weren't identified early on. But we found that through the previous events that our 60% number gets us in the right ballpark. It allows us to be able to provide funding through SWCDs for conservation on private lands. And in the end, if a particular SWCD's list is somewhat different than what you see in numbers, that will be worked with, if you will, through our program and with those SWCDs to put the money where it can do the best work.
So I have a question.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when so when you talk about, and thank you for that definition, and we always learn that the SWCDs are drastically underfunded, and so we understand that there's a great need there. So when you talk about needs defined by new conservation practices, these are needs that are not as much as repairing the floods, but you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong in that assumption, but that would be for new conservation practices so that this doesn't happen again in the future. Would that be accurate?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator, King? It's a combination of those because the new conservation practices are to repair a problem created by that event. There wasn't an existing conservation practice there, but because of the flood and new erosion, for example, new conservation practices are needed. So it's not purely about mitigating something into the future based upon no definition of a problem that exists. It's primarily focused on an existing erosion problem, for example, that wasn't there before. So it didn't have a previous conservation practice. It needs one now.
Thank you.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if the problem was mitigated quickly, the erosion problem, because it needed to be, would there be a reimbursement back to the county or to the specific landowner?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator King. Rosen, we have in past events allowed a repayment because typically, again, we won't receive money right away, and it may be something that the landowner needs to do immediately. So, therefore, reimbursement is eligible through our program.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Keene? Do you want to go through the second column?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. Under the bonding needs, again, these are for reinvesting Minnesota Reserve conservation easements on flooded land that the landowner wants to put into a program because it was damaged enough that they're not going to try to refarm it, if you will, continue farming it. So that's where we typically have then used reinvesting Minnesota Reserve conservation easements to take that land out of production, put it into permanent vegetation within floodplains primarily because that's the type of damage that that program can respond to. And in this column, again, you're not seeing the total needs defined by the SWCDs. You're seeing our estimate of the critical needs for those lands and programs because we know that those estimates typically are rougher maybe than the conservation practice numbers because there's potential large tracts. What those are worth is more difficult to estimate. So we've worked with SWCDs to try to just boil it down to what we believe are the most critical needs. We do have Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve program periodically providing opportunity for other times that landowners can enter into that program. So we've tried to, again, put forth to this effort the critical needs for conservation easements caused by the flood events.
Mr. Keene, when when you talk about easements, are these permanent easements? Or if they are permanent easements, where does the payments come from for future, or is it just an upfront payment?
Mr. Chairman, this is the Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program that Bowser has ongoing, that is funded by various sources of funding, and that also partners with federal programs whenever we can. There are permanent easements that would be taken for these lands held by the state through the Board of Water and Soil Resources, like other Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve conservation easements.
Thank you. All right. Any other information that you'd like to share with us?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe so, unless you have questions. And if not, then I will turn it over to Pat Lynch from DNR to speak to the other columns in that spreadsheet.
Thank you.
Morning, welcome. Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pat Lynch. I'm a floodplain hydrologist with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. You're probably accustomed to seeing my colleague Kent Locke this morning here before you. I'm sitting in for him today. The current bill is requesting $5.155 million for the Department of Natural Resources, and I'd like to walk you through how that money would be allocated. First of all, $2.14 million in general obligation bond funds would be utilized to repair some public facilities, and that would be broken down as follows. $1.8 million would be utilized to replace the dam at the Blue Mound State Park in Rock County. That dam failed as a result of the high water events in June and July last year. The balance, or $340,000, would be utilized to engineer, design, and replace a horse trail crossing at Fort Ridgely State Park near New Ulm. That, too, was severely damaged in the event. Both of those, the department fully expects reimbursement through the FEMA Public Assistance Program. We need the funding now to get this work done with, the expectation that the FEMA Public Assistance Program will reimburse us for our actual costs. And project worksheets have been submitted for both of those. In addition to the facility and natural resources damages, we're also seeking $3.015 million for flood hazard mitigation. And Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, to address Waterville, The mitigation money that we're asking for includes two parts. One is a grant to the Prior Lake Spring Lake Watershed District, as has been discussed here briefly. That is to help them repair some significant damage to the outlet system of the Prior Lake outlet. Just doesn't say specifically. There, too, the full expectation is that FEMA is going to cover the costs of those repairs. This is essentially to cash flow this for the watershed district so that they can initiate these much-needed repairs. Project worksheets have been submitted to FEMA for this project as well, and I think the watershed district folks are here today if they'd like to speak a little further about that. So we expect FEMA to pay for those costs. Again, it's estimated at about $1.4 million. $1.14 million in GO bond funds would be for a grant, flood hazard mitigation grants to local units of government who would be seeking FEMA HMGP hazard mitigation grant fund program funding for mostly acquisition and removal of at-risk or flood-damaged properties. So the DNR portion of this bill, the $1.14 million, would be to cover the 25% non-federal match for FEMA-eligible projects. And my colleagues at HSEM have developed a spreadsheet with a list of projects and estimated costs And again, $1.14 million represents 25% of the acquisition, demolition, removal, site restoration costs of about 16 acquisitions, I believe it is, statewide. The $500,000 in general fund money we're seeking is to address the 25% non-federal match for some non-bondable projects, and those would be relocation or elevation of structures in the floodplain, homes, and I believe one business perhaps. Six properties are in Waterville. Five are expected to seek funding and get grant assistance for elevating to a safe elevation above the 100-year flood elevation. And one property in Waterville would be a wholesale acquisition and removal. So the $500,000, again, there would be two relocation projects in Scott County for $242,000, one relocation project in City of Montevideo, $100,000, and five elevations or relocations in Waterville for $142,500. And I believe that the total is $484,500, which was rounded to $500,000. So that is how that $5.155 million would be allocated, should we receive it.
Mr. Lynch, could you make available that spreadsheet to the committee?
Yes, again, I received it from my colleagues at HSEM. I have it today. I don't know if they do have it with them today, but...
Well, you can... we don't have to hand it to us today, but if we could get a copy of that, then we could share it with
certainly
the committee members.
Yes, they did.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
I had a question on the it wasn't the last point that you were making, but the previous one. What was that? What the previous appropriation that you had, you were seeking?
Sorry.
The GO bonds? I got my question answered.
Okay.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when you talk about mitigation and damage repair, they're two of one, but did the DNR continues, I think, along with other state agencies to mitigate. Mitigate meaning to prevent floods. So this is basically damage repair you're asking for, and at the same time you're going to mitigate, basically. You are going to set it up as such where if another flood comes by, it doesn't do the damage again. So just for a point of clarity.
Mr. Lynch?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, excuse me. Correct. Again, a portion of our request is to replace damaged facilities, the bridge and the dam at the state parks. But the flood hazard mitigation, i.e. the removal of at-risk structures or the elevation of at-risk structures, is truly not repair, but it is truly mitigation, reducing or eliminating future damage due to flood.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in line with Senator Ingebrigtsen's question, so if you're going to be moving some structures, it sounds like there's six in Waterville and one business and in other areas, so you're going to move them to a location above the 100-year floodplain. I guess my question is, with this mitigation money, then what happens to that property where they were located before? Is that then deeded to be perpetually floodplain with no more structures added to that area, as we've done in certain areas, for instance, in the Red River Valley?
Mr. Lynch?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scalzi, and I apologize, I'm losing my voice at an inopportune time. Where we're acquiring and wholesale removal of the at-risk structures,
coming back.
Yes, the property would be owned by a public entity in perpetuity, and the space, the lot, and the space formerly occupied by a structure would remain in permanent open space. Where we're discussing the potential for relocation or elevation of an existing structure out above harm's way, so to speak, that's not a bondable expense. Thus, we requested some general fund money to address these. And in those instances, those would remain in private ownership.
Mr. Lynch, did you get your the dollar figure that you have on the spreadsheet that that the Senate or in the bill? You have $500,000, and do you have the exact dollar figure for that?
Mr. Chair, I do, and it's on the spreadsheet that my good friends at HSCM provided, and that total. Under the DNR, under the spreadsheet that was provided to you, and I believe this was generated by the Board of Water and Soil Resources, in column 4, DNR relocation on private property, I'm using the spreadsheet from HSCM, and that total for a general fund for relocation on private property is $484,500, which again was rounded up to $500,000 for this bill.
Generally, we do not round up or down. We try to hit the number.
Mr. Chair, I did not round that.
So, thank you. Any other questions, Senator Thomas?
Mr. Chairman, did I hear the witness say that that FEMA was going to reimburse this money? And that this money was like given up front, and then the FEMA was going to pay later. What did I hear you say there,
Mr. Chair? Senator Tomasoni, we expect our expectation is that FEMA will be reimbursing for the DNR facility damage, the $2.14 million for our repair of the Blue Mound Park Dam and the Fort Ridgely Bridge. And the $1.4 million for Prior Lake Spring Lake Watershed District's channel repairs. The flood hazard mitigation portion of our the remaining balance would not be reimbursed by FEMA. The balance would be the 25% match, local match for the FEMA HMGP grant program.
So, Mr. Chairman, that 25% match is what's in the bill?
Correct. Of the $3.015 million that is shown for flood hazard mitigation grants, $1.4 million of that we expect would be reimbursed by FEMA for the Prior Lake Spring Lake Watershed District's project.
On the spreadsheet, is there a way or one sheet that you could give us that shows where FEMA would be reimbursing? Or I don't think we have that, do we? That would be helpful.
That can be provided. Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair.
And then one other point is that before Senator Nelson has a question, but were there other places in the presentation where you rounded up?
Again, Mr. Chair, I did not round these numbers. So the short answer, no.
All right. Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think part of my questions have been
somewhat gotten to here, but I feel like I'm missing something here because the numbers that I'm hearing from the table, I'm not finding on any of the spreadsheets that we have here. So maybe when we get those documents, it will be helpful, but it was really hard to follow the testimony about what money was being used for what particular project because we just weren't seeing those same numbers on here. So I do look forward to getting those other spreadsheets, and particularly I'd like to, as we see then how much will be reimbursed by the feds, then those reimbursement dollars, I'd like to know what fund are they going into. In other words, if we are cash flowing the much-needed repairs until the federal money comes, I'd like to know what's the process then for having that federal money put back into the appropriate spots here at the state. And then I had one other question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson, that's a good point. And I think as we look at all of the sheets and in different lights, I think that's one of the reasons we would like to lay it on the table and get a more comprehensive fiscal understanding of it. So, and the sheet that was just handed out is helpful, but we'd like to be able to have this all put together.
Thank you.
So, Senator Nelson.
I'll look forward to that, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad to know that maybe this was just a informational hearing then to get more information out on the table. The last question, Mr. Chair, has to do with the spreadsheet that shows all the different counties and what the four different relief columns are. And there are these hash marks or these blanks, and I was wondering, like Beltrami for the first one is listed, but there's no dollar amount in either of the four columns. There's just a dash, and there's a few other areas with dash. Does that mean, like in the case of Beltrami County, why is that listed on here? Are there still needs that are coming in that need to be assessed, or like why is Beltrami listed? There's just not a single amount listed on here for Beltrami County.
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I think categorically it's an organizational thing saying we wanted to list all of the, or the agencies rather, wanted to list all of the counties that were included in the federal declaration, because without that, they're not eligible. And then it is incumbent upon the local units of government through outreach and meetings, if they have projects that fit into one of these programs, for them to bring it forward to the appropriate agency. So I think it's just here's everybody that could receive assistance under that authority. And if there's a blank there, it's because in the case, as you mentioned, Senator Beltrami County, Beltrami did not bring forward any unmet needs.
And last question,
Senator
Mr.
Nelson.
Chair. So are you expecting any more requests, or is the window for making those requests closed?
Well, Mr. Chair,
Mr. Kelly.
Senator Nelson, I'm not sure. I would think at this point that we have identified all of the unmet needs, unless there's some aggravating, complicating circumstance where a project is being batted back and forth between eligibility or not. After 10 months, I would hope that the needs have been identified, or then you have to question whether they're truly in need.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that question, Senator Nelson, because one of my counties that was on the disaster program or listed as a disaster county, apparently Watonwan didn't do anything. And I'm just wondering, Mr. Kelly, is it because the emergency management did not assist with them, or it was the local government that didn't it didn't fill out the forms and maybe didn't have the resources to list what the damage was? Do you know why some of these counties that obviously have the rainfall are on the first disaster list?
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, specifically county by county, I do not know. I would tell you that as we go out and do, as I mentioned earlier, as we do our applicant briefings, we gather up everybody from that county, all the local units of government that have identified damages specifically for the public assistance program, tell them about the process, explain that if you have other needs and other projects that are not covered by this program, what you do. Additionally, our hazard mitigation people go out and meet with the locals. So I don't know the answer to that. Wattenwan County could in your specific example, Senator, answer that question. But we do what we think is reasonable and appropriate outreach to make sure that the counties and the local units of government understand the process and what's available to them.
Okay. Any other? Oh, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so it's your determination that after 10 months now, everybody's had their opportunity, the counties included as well as the counties surrounding those. I believe they're included in a federal disaster. Is that correct? All the way around the counties, neighboring counties?
Mr.
Kelly. So they're all eligible. Has all of this come together into this bill, and this is going to be the final ask?
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I don't think, if I'm understanding, the contiguous county eligibility is not for FEMA.
Okay.
You'll often have that for Small Business right. Administration, in some case agriculture. We do believe, to the best of our ability and the process, that the locals have identified their needs and brought them forward. Can I say that with 100% certainty? No, sir, but this is, again, 10 months into this process. They should be identified at this point.
Well, then Mr. Chair, and maybe Senator Cohen can help answer this too, then we have emergency declarations where the governor calls us back. We've done this now in my 9 years, two or three different times where we call back into a special session. It seems to me that the work is done now, so fortunately we're here in session. And I'm gathering that we're going to postpone this. Is this pretty immediate? Does this need to be dealt with immediately as far as getting the monies out to the folks? Or why would we, Mr. Chair, maybe the question is why would we go forward much longer?
Senator Ingebrigtsen, obviously this is a bonding bill, and it has to start in the House. And so what we need is we need a House file. And that definitely creates a impasse of a sort. I visited with our counterpart in the House, our Representative Torkelson, and the hope is that they take similar action. And Senator Pratt's aware of this. And so what we want to do is try to get an understanding as a capital investment committee as much as we can and get everything in order so that if the opportune time comes that we can move forward. Senator Cohen?
Well,
I'm sorry. Senator Kiffmeyer had...
I think you should stay on the subject and send, Mr. Chairman, if that's okay. I'll right. wait until the subject is...
Senator Cohen?
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to echo your comments, because I've had the chance to talk to Senator Pratt a couple times this week, and I have some agreement with Senator Ingebrigtsen that we have some significant work that's been done. Now, I want to make sure that we do our own Senate vetting of the numbers to make sure that they're in compliance with the statutory. Our statutory ability to do this or to not go too far afield. But this is not meant to quibble with what we've been presented because, again, as been made clear, significant work has been done. But I'll echo what Senator Stumpf just said. Constitutionally, as everybody at this table knows, we can't proceed on this effort without a House file. Constitutionally, we don't have a choice. And I'll be real honest. When we began the session in January, and when we've done deficiency bills historically, and I don't mean, and I guess this would be the custom and usage, the deficiency bills have followed what's been laid out by the administration. It doesn't matter if it's the Dayton administration or the Plenty administration or the Ventura administration or the Carlson administration. Can't quite remember the Purpich administration. But that's what we've done with deficiency bills. In this instance, this year, you know, we had the disaster provision as part of the governor's deficiency bill. The Scott County provision was not part of that. And I assumed that this would be proceeding fairly simply. But I'll be real honest, Mr. Chairman, this, I'm going to get a little bit of field, but I think it's at this stage of the game, given where we are in the session, it's going to be instructive to everybody at this table and everybody in the building. I thought this would be handled simply. I thought we'd get a House file pretty quickly. I thought we'd have the opportunity to deal with this. I had conversations with some of the House chairmen, informal conversations, in February, March, and early part of March. And the thought was, as one of them said, we can deal with all this pretty easily, can't we? Meaning the totality of the session. I said, yeah, I think so. Knowing full well that there were House priorities that were not necessarily Senate majority priorities. All I've heard since then is no to everything. No to everything. And as we've watched the promulgation of targets for the finance divisions over the last couple of weeks, I have never seen such a gap. And if we go back 4 years ago when the majorities were reversed in this building, I never saw the rigidity from the then Senate Majority Caucus relative to how things were being taken care of in a much more difficult situation. And for the criticism voiced by us, and do I think you, the members of the minority at this table, did a perfect job 4 years ago? No. Would I have done things differently? Yeah. Would we have done a lot of the same things you did? Yes. But I didn't see a total dismantling of Plenty programs, much less Dayton programs, as we're seeing coming out of the House. So unless there's going to be some type of willingness to compromise and understand how the system works and the give and take of the legislative process coming out of a House majority that I've not seen in the years I've been here. And I'm talking about, you know, Republican majorities in the House. Unfortunately, this bill becomes almost Exhibit A of what should have been handled simply, cleanly, easily. And what we've seen the last 2 or 3 weeks does not bode well for the rest of the summer.
Chair?
Mr. Chairman?
Excuse me. Just a second.
Mr. Chairman, I think I was
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Senator Ingebretson, we've put a lot of urgency behind this bill, and I've had several conversations with Senator Stumpf about that these are unmet needs, and we do need to get these funds out to the local communities. So it's not necessarily reimbursement. We're not getting work done on the Prior Lake Outlet and Channel because we don't have the funds. We're not relocating properties because we don't have the funds. We're not doing the mitigation because we don't have the funds. And so while I appreciate that we probably have some long nights and grinding conversations, my hope is, Senator Cohn, is along the lines of yours, that we can do this very simply, help our local communities and continue to move forward. This bill is moving in the House. I haven't had a hearing yet, fortunately, but the original plan from that sense of urgency was to try to move these, the House and the Senate version, parallel, because we have yet another stop in finance, possibly two stops, one in Senator Tomasoni's committee. Senator Cohn, I know you've been thinking about that. And so making sure that we can get this done in the short amount of time that we have, it's unfortunate that this process has been drug out as long as it has, but that hasn't alleviated any of the need.
And I would just echo the my gratitude for all the work that has gone into it. I think, as Mr. Kelly mentioned, there's been a lot of gathering of information, and I think everything is very well put together. It's just we need to put some finishing touches on it, and hopefully we'll get this done. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sandberg, to that point, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Newman.
And I just want to stay on topic, as to what we're discussing. You've indicated that it's going to be your intent to lay this bill over. I have just now heard that, in all probability, Senator Cohn is going to want to see the bill. Senator Tomassoni is going to want to see the bill. We don't have any control over what the other body is going to do or not do. I mean, we have to do what we're going to do here in the Senate. And so my question is, procedurally, if you lay the bill on the table when we're done today, rather than move it to either Finance or to Senator Tomassoni's committee and get that work done, if, for instance, the other body moves on this thing, will we still have time to complete our work? And so I'm wondering if we shouldn't send the bill on to Finance if Senator Cohn wants it, or on to Senator Tomassoni's committee, and then have it come back here. So it's more a question, Mr. Chair, than anything else, is procedurally, what is the best way for us to get our Senate work done on this bill?
Senator Newman, personally, as a chair, I want to see the information more comprehensively packaged so that we can look at it and explain it quite easily. And I think some of the information that on the spreadsheet, as Senator Nelson mentioned, and I think all of us experienced, it's a little more difficult to see where the money's going and double-check our figures, as Mr. Lynch mentioned, a little rounding up here and there, maybe just one place. It shouldn't take that long, but I think quick as we get things put together for our committee members, that we can look at it and say, yeah, put our stamp of approval on it, we can move it forward. And as you know, the Finance Committee doesn't have a schedule or doesn't have a deadline, and I don't think the Capital Investment Committee has a deadline. So we should be in okay shape in terms of not having any roadblocks. So, Senator Cohn?
Yeah, just procedurally, the Chairman, to answer Senator Newman. The difficulty we have now is, and that's why I said I thought this would be moving a little bit more quickly than it has been. I'm not going to speak for what Senator Stumpf, what the Chairman would like to do within this committee. But as you know, you can send the bill over, Mr. Chairman. If you decide to move the bill out of committee today, you move to the Finance Committee. I'm not in a position to do much now for the next couple of weeks. I guess maybe we could have a Saturday meeting or something like that potentially. But with all of the omnibus bills now, that becomes the priority. And as far as my sending the bill to Senator Tomassoni's division when it gets to Finance, I mean, Senator Tomassoni and I really haven't talked about it. Generally, if a division chair wants to hear something, usually I'll refer it to that division chair. But we haven't talked about it. But certainly keep in mind, at least procedurally, that when this bill gets to the Finance Committee, it doesn't have to go to Senator Tomassoni's division, come back to the floor, go back to the full committee. It's all within the Finance Committee. We could have a hearing an hour later in the Finance Committee, theoretically. So, the Finance Committee will move fairly quickly, and what I'll do is try to make sure that I have some sense, comfort with the dollars, the general fund dollars, which generally I think I am, but want to make sure and have it done ahead of time. So some things I'm happy to do to expedite things, but But again, absent a House file, it's you can pass the law out of here and have it sit on the floor for 2 months if you'd like. We need the House file. Not if you like, but... Yeah.
I understand, and thank you, Senator Cohen. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm just amazed here. I've sat through quite a few emergency funding. I'm thinking maybe we should always have a special session because we can stay focused and be on that exclusive issue, which has worked well, I think, in the past. But for me to be here and say you just need more information to push this bill on to the next committee and get our Senate work done, my gosh, we've had less information from other emergency bills. It's the very nature that they have, that their construction, that all the issues that they have to deal with. And that's why in the bill language you have portions of money that are, whether it's the revenue or whether it's the appropriation expenditure, that are laid out there in those amounts. And then there is a process by which they submit the bills, they get reimbursed, they go through the process, they get all approved, they collect the data, they match that through. That is a normal and customary process. This kind of flooding and emergency issues always have a bit of, you're not absolutely certain, but you get a good estimate, you get a good idea, and then we always have language that any money left over either goes in the account or goes back into the general fund. And so we have many controls in place already. So, Mr. Chairman, we can certainly move this bill on. Do our work. We've done it sufficiently here, sufficient to any other measuring stick that I've seen going through this process. And as far as needing a House file, goodness sakes, when the House file comes over to the Senate floor, we use the House file. But we don't hold up everything because of that situation when we have committee work that needs to be done. And we certainly have a process in place to take care of this, and we don't need to hold this up. And I'm just concerned, Mr. Chairman, when I hear comments made about that are very quite political in regards to negative comments about the other body and blah, blah, blah. I just don't think that that's a very good way to enter into this kind of discussion because we've usually tried to keep all of that out of the way and just work on this. But I think we have a job as a Senate to do our work and not hold things up. Because I think in this case, as much information or what is needed, and we can move this bill on forward, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. Senator Sundjian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to kind of jump in here too as well. As I look at the numbers here, and just round numbers, avoiding the loose change, where we have a $13 million finance bill and a $9 million bonding bill. I mean, this is clearly more finance than it is bonding in round numbers. And so I think, the idea of this remaining here and not just moving on to finance, and I will tell you, as you think about, special sessions on flooding, we will come in as a capital investment committee, and I don't know, 8 or 9 o'clock, the committee will meet. We'll pass the bill out. We'll send it up to finance. They will deal with it. And at 2 o'clock or so, we'll take it on the floor of the Senate, and we will adopt a special session flood control bill or flood bill, flood response bill. And that is about as much introspection as we've ever gotten in a lot of these. And I would say Red River Valley, Austin, Rushford, we probably already vetted this bill as much as we've vetted any of those others that I remember. And I clearly remember many times over, or several times at least, the Senate Bonding Committee under Senator Lanxess, and maybe even myself, as maybe perhaps Senator Roebling out in the audience can confirm, we would process these bills, move them through the systems, get them to the floor, and they may wait for the House bill to come over, but they would be there and they would be ready. So it just seems to me that, I don't know, this is getting a little more political than policy, but we ought to, there's no reason in the world why we can't move this bill through and have it in waiting if and when a House bill does arrive. It's just clearly what I think we ought to be doing.
Senator Nelson?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I echo the comments from Senator Senjum and Senator Kiffmeyer. It does seem like there were some other purposes here today, but I want to make sure that it is clear that the federal funds are in are coming. I do not believe that they're being held up. Well, I want to just clarify that, and that the bill that we're talking about today is for those non-FEMA, those things that have not that FEMA does not cover. And I do appreciate the fact that this discussion should and continue on. And this whole idea that things are being held up by what the other body is doing, we never use that. So I don't believe that that is the case here. And I think this is an important issue that does need to get clarified. I do want more numbers. Like I said, the numbers didn't really add up to what I was hearing. But that doesn't mean that things should stall. And nor should we be talking about trying to put pressure on the other body based on this committee. So I'm a little bit disappointed by that. But just want to clarify that the bill we're talking about today is for the non-FEMA funds. Is that correct? Non-FEMA expenses.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Kelly.
Nelson, yes, that is my understanding as well.
Right.
Yes.
So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
So I just wanted to make sure that the public was not left with the impression that there was no flood relief, but actually the flood relief has come through from the feds, and what we're talking about today are the things that the feds do not cover.
Correct. Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, you are correct.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We have some other members or people to testify. Senator Pratt.
If I could just call up two additional testifiers, sure. Diane Lynch from Prior Lake, Spring Lake Watershed District, and Senator Roebling.
Okay. And as they come up to give their testimony, members of the Capital Investment Committee, we will be having additional meetings. I don't have the list with me, but so we'll be starting, since we actually now can get rooms, we'll be having more regular meetings, and I'll get a list of those dates and times. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, real quickly before they testify. So what I'm gathering from the discussion going on here, the other body has got to make this action, and you know that's neither here nor there. It's too bad that hasn't happened, but I would hope that I have the assurance of both yourself and Senator Cohen that this is going to proceed as a standalone emergency bill and not used as a vehicle for something else, because that's what we've always done in the past when we dealt with emergencies.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, as quick as we have the information and stuff that we, I think Senator Nelson and a number of others would like, we can come back to this bill. And I think that shouldn't take all that long. So it's just a matter of putting all the information that we have together and understanding, you know, for me, understanding a little more clearly what where the money's going, if the figures are correct, and you know, I think having some more, I think all of the information is here, or close to all of it is here. It's just a matter of putting it together so that we can all understand it. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate those numbers, but that's exactly the reason why it should go to the Finance Committee and be processed. The Finance Committee is the place where they take a look at those issues,
sure,
and reconcile them. That's why we have a Finance Committee.
Mm-hmm. Correct. All right. Welcome, Senator Roebling. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. I think this will start. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Diane Lynch. I'm the district administrator of the Prior Lake Spring Lake Watershed District.
And as you've heard earlier, we have $1.4 million request in this bill. A majority of that is we're working with FEMA right now. We're not finished with our worksheets with them, but the majority of that will be covered by FEMA. And what that is for is to repair a 7-mile outlet channel that runs from Prior Lake all the way to the Minnesota River. The Watershed District was formed back in 1970 primarily to deal with flooding issues. We have landlocked lakes. There's nowhere for the water to go. So it took a lot of work, but in 1983 we finally got a outlet channel built. It was very controversial. And what we have done is received easements for the center point of the channel on out for the entire length of the channel. The channel is governed by a cooperative agreement between the city of Prior Lake, the city of Shakopee, the Mattaquaken and Sioux community, and the Prior Lake Spring Lake Watershed District. We are the jurisdiction that has the authority to make decisions on the outlet channel. Now, we've had a lot of flooding events through the years. The worst one was probably last year. And if it weren't for the channel, we would have had an additional 6 feet of water in the area. Prior Lake had 40 houses that were underneath or lower than the peak level of flooding. Only two houses actually went under because of the significant sandbagging that occurred during that flood. And there were 120,000 sandbags that were put in. So the outlet channel is a very key piece of keeping the properties protected. We had a lot of damage, as you can imagine. We have a 36-inch pipe. It was built initially for 60 CFS to go through there. When we expanded it in a few years ago, we expanded it so we could run about 60 CFS through there, as Senator Pratt mentioned. And we still had trouble keeping it, the levels low, because the pipe was simply full for about 2 months. So we need to be able to make sure that we can go back and repair all the damage that was done in the channel. The channel was partially a natural bed. It's also swale. When we went and fixed the outlet structure a few years ago, we also fixed the channel. And we did get bonding for that a few years back. So we're simply asking for support to help us do the work that we need to do. We had culverts that blew out as well. So a significant amount of damage along the channel. And one thing I should have said initially is that when we put the channel in, it was never meant to prevent flooding. It's a relief valve, simply put. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And is that Prior Lake, Spring Lake, so there's two lakes?
Yes, we have. So, we actually have more than two lakes, but the two lakes that were mostly involved in the flood was Prior Lake, which has a lower and an upper, and then Spring Lake.
Okay. All right. Any questions that members have? Sure. Senator Tomasoni?
So to the witness, did I hear you say you have a $1.4 million FEMA request in?
Yes.
And is that part of what's in this bill that will
that's
then be...
That's completely what's in this bill.
And then that will be that's the part that will be refunded?
Yes.
So that's different than what Senator Nelson said.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, this is definitely will be refunded by FEMA.
Okay.
Right. But we don't have that money sitting in our coffers. And so what happens with major disaster money that FEMA will allot is that you have to do the repair first, and they will pay you back. And we simply don't have that kind of money.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Claire Roebling, Communications and Legislative Coordinator for Scott County. And part of that is true also with the DNR projects. They don't have the money in their agency accounts to pay for some of their work that FEMA is expected to reimburse. So that is also in this bill, just like the Prior Lake project would be. But some of that money, I imagine 75% would come back to the state when FEMA reimbursement came through. But anyway, I just wanted to talk a little bit about some history. And certainly this has been a more long-drawn-out disaster relief package than most have been in the past, when we would normally have a special session. And after the 2012 Duluth disaster, I had talked to the governor extensively about setting up a disaster relief account, and certainly they did that the next year. And the problem was they only put $3 million in, and so it wasn't enough for the size of the disaster that occurred. And so we had to come back and right away at the beginning of this year, quick get some money to pay the bills that were sitting there. And now we're coming back with some additional requests. And, you know, this has always in the past been very nonpartisan and pretty nonpolitical. And it is also pretty expected that there would be a significant amount of additional money beyond what FEMA has matched. I remember in 2012 when I was the finance chair, and we had the Duluth disaster, and I remember hearing the report that FEMA was going to pay, the FEMA total was $100 million. And I was so relieved because the state had no money, and I thought, oh, good, then we will only have to come up with $25 million as our state and local match. And the request that came in from that region was like $220 million. And I was dumbfounded at first and then started to go through this whole process that you're looking at today to find out what they were all requesting. And in the end, after things were vetted more thoroughly, the total package was $159 million. Only $25 million was the FEMA match. And the same thing happened in 2007 for the Southeast Minnesota flood. The cost of that disaster relief package for the state was $169 million, and it appears that only $17 million was the FEMA match. So what we have now so far is basically FEMA match that the state has done, and then these other things have been gathered and brought in over this period of time. And I think because it's been 10 months since the disaster, that we've probably seen a better vetting of these projects than at any other time in the recent past, at least. And so I think that we're pretty solid with most of our numbers. It's been interesting. When we first put a request out in Scott County, our requests that came in from our local units of government were more than what the bill is today. And then we did some work with them, and we ran them through the different agencies to find out what was eligible and what met the criteria. And now today, Scott County's request is about $4.5 million. You'll see that's what they would be getting. But it was like $21 million to start. So these projects have been vetted, and we believe that the agencies have done a good job with that. We went through the Minnesota Recovery Task Force and turned over all of the fact sheets to them, and they had a chance to look at them, and we're feeling pretty good about them, and we certainly would appreciate your support.
Great. Thank you very much, Senator. Any questions that members have? There was one. I had. Was there a problem with a road where you had the? You said the pipe was full of water all summer long. Does that mean that it was running or discharging out of the lakes all summer long?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct.
And did it affect roads as well?
Yes. We actually, there is County Road 21, which probably was on the news a lot, blew out because the lining from the pipe actually came loose and went kittywampus, and so you had all that water pressure, and it just burst the street. Okay. There were a lot of streets that were closed. Commerce was really affected because people couldn't get to businesses as well, in Prior Lake particularly.
Okay. Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I perhaps this question should be for later for Mr. Kelly, but just wondering on that flood hazard mitigation grants, why some of them are grants and some of them are GO bonds, how that is designated.
Okay. Mr. Kelly, thank you again.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, if I understand your question, that we can only use or suggest bond funding when the property that's being acquired is going to go into for lack of a better term, public trust. In other words, it's going to be, as it was mentioned earlier by someone, we're going to buy up that property, it's going to become public land, and it won't be built on for the rest of time. So to use bonding money, it has to go to the public. The general fund money is often used to help property owners mitigate the property, but they're going to stay there, like elevating property and so forth. And because it's not going to go and be the in the hands of the public, we cannot use bonding money for that.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Pratt, do you have a Paul Nelson? Is that
Yes, Paul is our county manager.
Okay. Welcome. And then if there's anyone else that wants to testify, that's the last one that I have on the list. So welcome, Mr. Nelson. Give
you
a name,
Mr. Chair,
for the record.
Senators. I was actually here back up to answer questions in case you had any, unless you want to hear me talk.
Well, are there any questions that we have for Mr. Nelson? If not, thank you for being here. Is there anyone else that would like to share anything? I see an old colleague here from, down by Owatonna, Tom Shea. So, I think it is unusual that we'd have a disaster of this magnitude very often. I mean, this is almost... must be half of the counties in the state. So, I mean, it is a massive series of disasters, but it's a large one. You know, if you have a localized, my familiarity with disasters like the flooding in the Red River, you know, it takes in a number of counties, but it's somewhat localized. And so when you look at this, this is quite unique, I think, in the sense of the magnitude of the territory that's affected. So,
Mr. Chair, if I could, just eyeballing the list, we've had 10 federally declared disasters since 2010. This one, just on the size of the list of counties, is the largest. Probably not the largest necessarily in dollar value, but in the amount of counties and tribal governments that have been involved. So, yes, sir, it is an extensive event.
And consequently, it takes a lot of searching and a lot of information gathering, and you're working with a lot of people, and you mentioned that, and I think that does reflect, you know, that it does take time, and we appreciate your managing that. And I realize that you just took over this in 2014. Is that correct?
2015, sir.
15.
In January.
Oh,
Mr.
in January.
Chair.
Okay, so you had a lot in your lap right from the very beginning. So. But I just want to thank everyone for helping put this information together, and we'll temporarily lay this on the table for
Mr. Chairman?
Senator.
There was a hand raised.
Oh,
I don't
I'm
know
sorry,
if you noticed.
Senator Nelson.
I was going to move the bill to finance. We've heard the need. We all agree upon the need. We realize there's more numbers. We need to see those numbers. And we've spent a good deal of time here today. And before my hand was up, Mr. Chair, and I was moving the bill to finance.
Senator Nelson, I think you yourself mentioned that you would like to see more information and
yes.
have not necessarily more information. I'd like to see an orderly putting together of the information that we have, and I think it would be helpful for all of the members to see that what's going to be covered, what's going to be repaid, what's going to come out of the general fund, and what the actual bonding would be. So the chair would like to lay this on the table.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond to that.
Sure.
I am very interested in those numbers, and I think we all should be, and that really begs the question, why did we have today's hearing if we didn't actually have all the numbers in place? I'm left thinking that there was a political reason for this hearing and that it was all about putting pressure on other entities, and I find that really unbecoming of the Minnesota Senate. And so, yes, I want to be very clear, we do want those numbers, but I do believe that those numbers could come in finance. Okay. And so that was my motion to move it to finance so those numbers could come in that orderly fashion. And so that's my motion.
Okay. Well, on Senator Nelson's motion, I would oppose it, and I think that it does not delay the movement of this proposal or this legislation, and the chair has no intent of stalling just by laying it on the table. I would like to, ask members' support that we would, temporarily lay this on the table so that we can take it up as quickly as possible, but having the information that we have today is some of it is new, some of it is still. I'd like to go over it, and I think members should go over it as well. So, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would speak to support of the moving the bill, and here's why. This is an emergency. We've, as the gentleman just said, we've had 10 over the last X amount of years. A whole lot of people have come together today to get some action on this bill, Mr. Chair, and I think it's very clear. The chairman of the Finance Committee is here, and I think with your good guidance and telling those folks that are going to have to come to the Finance Committee that have everything in order because we're ready to move. So when the other body does make that decision to move forward, they can get the dollars that are needed. This is an emergency bill, and we should be doing that, and I'd ask for a roll call.
Okay. Roll call has been asked.
Mr. Chair, can I just offer just a very quick comment?
Senator Sengen.
And I would agree. This, in my mind, is an emergency bill. We can get a little parochial and say, I've got Dodge County on that list. Senator Stump, you may have some counties on this list looking at the map. 195,000. Well, that doesn't seem like a lot of money in terms of the way we talk up here, but to Dodge County, that's a lot of money. And to be able to give them some assurance that at least this bill is moving in the Senate would be a good message for me, and I think for other members, both Republicans and Democrats that represent counties in the Senate that are affected by this disaster.
Senator Tomassoni.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm a little bit miffed at this because I don't think anybody in here doesn't want to give this money to the people who need it. I mean, they need it really badly, and it's an emergency bill, and it's going to get done. It's just a matter of the chairman feeling comfortable with the bill. It's a bonding bill, and this is the bonding committee, and this vote is going to be represented as for or against this disaster, and it's nobody here is against giving the money for the disaster, and so I don't think it's an appropriate motion right now because I don't think the chair is ready to move it out of here, and I think that everybody today found that there's some more information that can be found, and so Mr. Chairman, I'll just move to lay it on the table.
Senator Tomassoni moves to lay it on the table. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank you. You've been extremely gracious and a good partner in working with me and understanding the urgency of this bill and having this hearing before the other body moved on it. As you know, I still have.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me. I'm sorry, but that's a non-debatable motion.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to debate it, Senator.
Yeah, I understand, but.
I just wanted to say that
it's a non-debatable motion. We have to debate. We have to vote immediately, and then I'm sure the chairman would allow you to speak.
Senator,
Mr. Chair, roll call on the motion, please.
Senator Sengen requests a roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Scalzi?
Yes.
This? Okay.
On the motion to table.
Yes. Go ahead.
Senator?
I vote no to table.
Champion?
Yes.
Cohen?
Yes.
Eakin? Ingerbitson?
No.
Kiffmeyer?
No.
Nelson?
I vote no to table this bill.
Newman?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Rosen?
No.
Sieben?
Yes.
Tomasoni?
Yes.
Stumpf?
Yes.
The roll is 8 in favor of tabling it, 5 opposed. The motion prevails. I was going to mention before that roll call, Senator Tomasoni, that I think of anyone in the legislature, at least on the Senate side, I have voted for more disaster relief for different communities around the state than any other Senate member. You know, maybe, and we will on this as well, you know, and I think to give assurances to the communities that have come and to your district and others that are affected across the state, it takes time, and it's so unfortunate that we do have disasters, and they are very time-consuming. If you look at the community of Roseau that was flooded back in 2002, we're just now finishing up on the diversion around the city of Roseau. And so, you know, what's like, 13 years? Or 11 years. So disasters are very difficult in communities, and we intend, I think all, I could speak for the Senate, we intend to help you, help those communities. So thank you very much, Senator Pratt, and others who came. We will have a hearing on April 20th, and that hearing will be with the Department of Administration, the Minnesota State Academies, and the Perpich Center for the Arts. All of those will be talking about their needs for asset preservation. One other point. The new fiscal analyst that is helping us is Casey, Casey Mum, and we appreciate your being willing to help us, and look forward to working with you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, perhaps just a question of yourself or Casey. In other years, we would receive sheets from MMB relative to cancellations. In other words, projects that had gone on for 4 years and were on a cancellation list for this year. Have you seen such a document in recent times?
I have seen the cancellation report, yes.
Is it possible that the rest of the committee might get those just in case there's projects that we might represent or, frankly, people in our caucuses might represent that they might not be aware of?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have just a comment. I want to thank Senator Pratt for bringing this forward, but I also more specifically want to thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you do a really great job in your committee. That was a hard vote. I have 6 out of the 7 of my counties that I'm honored to serve on this list.
I hope that this stays non-political, that we can move this bill forward without any politics involved. But as it went through the hearing and some of the comments made, it was apparent that there might be something else going on here that makes me a little concerned. So my hope, Mr. Chair, is that we keep this pure. This is not a political bonding bill. This is disaster relief. And so I really do appreciate your intentions and your commitment to that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to follow up on Senator Rosen's comments. I voted yes on the Tomasoni motion, and I did so specifically on your assurances that this bill will be moving forward, and I trust that is exactly what you have in mind. And I just wanted you to know that in my reliance on that, I voted with the chair, and that is by way of explanation to some of my colleagues as to the reason for my vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank you and the rest of the committee for hearing the bill today. I know this is typically a day when people like to head home, and I know there are other committee meetings going on, so thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank all of you who have come to the hearing. Committee is adjourned.